So our panel today, first we'll have USMEF President and CEO Dan Hallstrom. He will make some remarks kind of covering a global overview, a little bit of the developments that have transpired over the past few days. It's been a pretty active week on the trade front. Then we have Joel Haggard, who is based in Hong Kong. He is our Senior Vice President for the Asia Pacific. Joel, of course, spends a lot of his time on Hong Kong and China, but also oversees all of our Asian markets. He'll be followed by Jihei Yang, who is our director based in Seoul. She is our director in South Korea. And we also have Oscar Ferrara, who is our regional director for Mexico, Central America, and the Dominican Republic. So I am going to go ahead and hand it over to Dan. Once Dan is finished, we'll move on to the other panelists. And then once everybody has made their remarks, we'll go to a question and answer session. With that, Dan Hallstrom.
Thank you, Joe. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our call. I wanted to start out just to give a really quick, brief recap on the first quarter results, starting with beef. The numbers from January through March came in at 307,000 metric tons, down just about 3%, and right at 1.9 billion U.S., which is just down slightly, so we call it steady to minus one on the beef side. I would say on the beef side, considering all the noise out there on the trade front and some of these countries that have duties, we're relatively encouraged by that performance. We have gains in some of the key markets, Japan up a couple percent, Mexico's up slightly, Korea up 8%, Caribbean region as a whole, which is a growing region, is up 17%. I think we had some broad-based growth in some key regions. The two markets or regions that stand out that have seen a downward spiral, one is the Middle East region, which is primarily Egypt, which is primarily a liver market. And then, of course, the region I know you want to hear more about, Hong Kong, China, which was down 36% on beef, and we'll come back to that later. But overall, I'd say we're encouraged by the beef side of things. Switching over to pork at the moment, January to March results on pork came in at 600,000 metric tons, which was down 6% year-on-year. And on the value side, we were at $1.47 billion, down about 14%. Starting with the positives, we saw some real significant growth in some of the more medium-sized markets that are emerging, specifically the South American region, up 41% as a whole. But that was a combination of Chile, Peru, and Colombia all showing pretty substantial growth. And then we had some other smaller, medium to smaller markets, Taiwan, Central American region, and the ASEAN region, all showing significant growth. So that's the positive side of things. The two markets that were challenged were Mexico and Hong Kong, China, both duty related. You know, on the Mexico side, we've seen a 29% decrease in value, equivalent to about $110 million year-on-year decrease in value versus a year ago. And as you all are well aware, a lot of this is attributable to the 20% duty that was leveraged against U.S. pork last summer of 2018. So I need to emphasize that this has been a real focus for our industry and for USMEF in particular. We're seeing share decline a bit year-on-year to the tune of about 4%. We're still the dominant supplier of imported pork into Mexico, but we have seen the share drop about 4% to the advantage of some of our competitors, i.e. Canada and Europe. So we're constantly trying to protect turf that's ours, and Mexico and the whole NAFTA region, for that matter, would fall at the top of that list. So some of the developments that started last Friday we're very encouraged by. We did see a resolution on the steel and aluminum 232 issue with both Mexico and Canada, and we are very encouraged by that. And then a follow-up to that, last Friday, we saw both Canada and Mexico drop the retaliatory duties. In the case of pork, the 20% duty was lifted as of yesterday, which is the best news that we've heard in quite a long time. So we're very, very encouraged by that. And I would like to take this chance to express from the USMEF that we really would like to thank President Trump, Ambassador Lighthizer, and the administration for their tireless work on working out an agreement with Mexico and Canada on the steel and aluminum duties and consequently resulting in the lifting of the product duties. We are also hopeful that this could lead to a swift passing of the new USMCA or NAFTA 2.0. The value of this relationship, the North American relationship with Canada and Mexico, in terms of potential export value for the beef, pork, and lamb industries, it cannot be understated. I mean, it's an immense opportunity, has been in the past and will continue to be in the future for, like I said, for the U.S. Beef, pork, and lamb industries. Moving on to Japan, just a couple of comments. It's still our number one value market on both beef and pork. Sales in 2018 exceeded $3.7 billion, that's including both beef and pork. Quarter number one in 2019 is still number one region for our exports at about $850 million. On the good news front, we do have some more good news to report there. We have finally regained over 30 months access on U.S. beef. This dates back to the BSE issue in 2003, December. It's been something that the industry has been focused on, working very closely with USDA and USTR on regaining access on the over 30 month of age cattle. USMEF estimates that this is a value opportunity, an incremental value opportunity of between $150 and $200 million a year for the U.S. beef industry. The primary products would be a range of products that will be impacted. But the primary products would include, on the variety meat side, would include mountain chain tripe and beef tongue would probably be the two largest items on the variety meat side. And then on the middle meat side, tenderloins and strip loins, and probably some chuck rolls and a few other products as well. But suffice it to say, this is another segment that competes pretty directly with Australia, where we should be able to make some market share impact in relatively short order. So we're excited about that. And once again, we thank USDA and USTR for their tireless efforts to regain access on the over 30 months for Japan. However, Japan, headwinds continue on another front, and that's on the tariff front for the rest of our beef. CPTPP competitors continue to enjoy tariff advantages vis-a-vis the U.S. In the case of beef, Australia, Mexico, and Canada are all enjoying 12% roughly tariff advantage entering into Japan. On the pork side, similar, Canada, Chile, Mexico, and the EU do have tariff advantages on certain HS codes. So, we're still seeing growth in this market. We will continue to see growth, but the potential for increased growth is much higher if we can get on a level playing field. So once again, we're aligned with the industry, working with USDA and USTR to move forward on an agricultural agreement with Japan. I would say, now that we have had progress on USMCA, we hope to have the same sort of progress with Japan towards the agricultural agreement. Last market I would like to touch on before handing it over to the rest of my colleagues here is China. Just a quick recap on where we are on China. On the pork side, we saw the first quarter come in about 20% down on volume, 34% down on value, $172 million value difference year on year on the pork side. And this is pretty much directly attributable to the duties that we have on U.S. pork, 62% duties on U.S. pork entering into China versus our competitors are at 12% or less. And it's hitting us on all fronts, but it's really hitting us hard on the variety meat side. Pork variety meats are a specialty in China, have huge demand, but we really are handicapped there with these duties. On the beef side, we're down as well. 34% down on volume, 29% down on value on the beef side. We're at $190 million on beef. Once again, we do have duties on the beef side. We're at 37% duty on U.S. beef, and most of our competition is 12% or less. So obviously, there's a lot of moving parts when you're talking about China. You have the duty issue. You have African swine fever. You have a lot of other things going on in terms of the total China agreement that's being worked on diligently by our government. So I think the way to sum up China, and my colleague Joel will talk in more detail, but I think the primary issue here is uncertainty. Whether it's duties, the trade deal, ASF, there's a lot of uncertainty, and that will probably continue for a time. But hopefully, if we can get a trade deal, you know, consummated with China, that might help clear up at least some of the uncertainty. So with that, I will conclude my remarks.
Thank you, Dan. Next, we'll hear from Joel Haggard. Again, Joel is based in Hong Kong, and he's our Senior Vice President for the Asia Pacific.
Thank you, and thanks, everyone. Yes, as Dan concluded his remarks, uncertainty. I think uncertainty is the major buzzword of the day among the world's protein providers and protein consumers. Last week in China, the CL exhibition convened, which is probably becoming one of the largest gatherings of the world food trade and the world meat trade. And again, uncertainty, hall talk, questions, how big is the shortfall? What will be the consumption response? How high will prices go? How big will imports be? How many other countries in the region may get afflicted by ASF? So a lot of uncertainty there. It's a strange situation being in China, because if you're in Shanghai or Beijing, there's an eerie calm about the supply situation. You go to a supermarket, pork is on sale. There's no empty shelves. Prices are similar to what they were in January, and not up by the 100% levels that you might expect from some of the scenarios being floated out there. Just as a reference point in terms of the degree of the shortfall, I would say MEF, in basing some of its protein math scenario calculations that we'll be discussing a lot this week at our meeting, we're kind of referencing the official numbers put out by the Ministry of Agriculture and Rural Affairs, and they recently updated their April number. So this is a year-on-year number, and I won't give you the actual number, because in China, the numbers are so big and there's uncertainty over how big the number actually is that we tend to focus on the delta, the change. And so the Ministry of Agriculture and Rural Affairs recently published their April year-on-year number, and they showed sows down 22% and total inventories down just under 21%. So those are always those are already very large numbers. If one keeps in mind just a very rough production number of 50 million tons, consumption a couple million tons over that, being filled by imports, still a very high self-sufficiency there. But everyone is asking, okay, so when is this going to manifest itself in terms of big imports and much higher prices within the country, and then some of the more visible manifestations of product shortages? So it's funny, because if we look at the import statistics for China during the first quarter, everything shot up: beef, poultry, and sheep meat, but pork went down. So this is just part of the kind of the frustration being expressed by analysts and people in the meat trade again, trying to figure out when this supposed hole will develop and then start to affect all protein supplies. Between March and April, we saw a global increase in pork prices as speculation increased over when the hole might develop. But last week at the show, we were hearing stories that the warehouses are full, consumption is weak, there was more product on the way, so people all of a sudden are talking, oh, well, maybe there'll be another little downtick before the hole manifests itself. So, again, there's all kinds of theories over the date on the supply hole, and I can't give you any definitive answer on when that might be. But certainly as time goes on and China works through the large frozen pork stocks that started to accumulate after the first case last fall, then at some point the supply should dwindle, and everything will start to move up. Moving to the beef side, China continues to just have a voracious appetite for imported beef. Imports are up by 47%. And that's 47% on a very large number. Last year, you saw total beef trade into the region increase by 8%. But these are massive numbers. China's already the largest beef importer. Its imports are over double number two market, which is here in the United States. And at this show last week, there was still signs of an appetite to import more. So we're going to see a lot more beef being imported into China. Poultry imports for the first quarter were up 40%. But again, if you take all those other species and add up what's been imported so far and what could be imported from all sources, if we're talking a 20% shortfall, it won't be able to make it up. But again, I think at this meeting we'll be talking about some of that math and how everything will could sort itself out. Around other parts of the region, we're starting to see the effects of just the overpowering market effect of China. Some countries took advantage of low U.S. prices in the first quarter to stock up. Australia is one. It's one we don't normally talk about. Usually a buyer of European product, U.S. market share of imported pork into Australia has jumped over 50% during the first quarter. We're seeing double-digit increases in shipments to Taiwan and some of these other smaller markets like Philippines. Vietnam, of course, is one that's been in the news as another hard-hit African swine fever country. It doesn't have much of a history as a protein importer. So, again, everyone's trying to figure out how much can that country take in terms of protein imports, given an infrastructure to handle imports that's not nearly as developed as that in China. I would say overall, for the rest of the region, and we're going to shift to Korea here in a minute, beef is very positive in terms of consumption. We have metrics on the increases in per capita beef consumption that show a strong increase just in the last several years in countries like Japan, Korea, and Taiwan, where you have 1 kilo increases. That's a lot of increase over just the space of a couple of years. So the beef picture looks very strong. It's just going to be a question of how much China imports in terms of beef to fill the overall protein shortage and what that does to prices. So I think I'll stop there, and because I know there'll probably be some questions. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Joel. You mentioned China importing record volumes of beef. Obviously, only a small amount of that comes from us. Would you just tell us who their main suppliers are right now?
Right. Well, South America, this is a South American market, so about two-thirds of the beef being imported into China is from South America. Then you have Australia and New Zealand. Australian exports of beef to China are up almost two-thirds. Grain-fed exports to China are up almost two-thirds. And the U.S. is sitting it out right now. We have a 0.5% market share. We should, as far as I'm concerned, we should be at 10%.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Joel. We're going to move now to the Korean market with G.A. Yang. Korea, obviously a really fast-growing market for U.S. beef. Last year, total U.S. beef exports were up by just over $1 billion, and Korea was half of that growth. And Korea also became a top five pork market last year, had a very outstanding year for U.S. pork exports. So Ji-hae is based in Seoul, is our Korea director, and I'll turn it over to her.
Thank you, Joe. Good afternoon, everybody. I will start off to explain that how favorable the trade environment in Korea is, because the last year the beef and pork export to Korean market was tremendous, and thanks to the CORUS FTA, the South Korea becomes very competitive and favorable market for U.S. beef and pork, and high demand of protein in Korea. Korea heavily import the U.S. beef and pork, while the domestic production remains steady or slow growth to capture the fast increasing demand. The domestic beef and pork supply growth is limited because of the tight environmental regulation and high cost of feed, labor, and land and other input costs. So abundant supply of U.S. beef and pork also contributed to important role on this recent growth. First off, regarding the beef, U.S. beef is subjective to 18.7% tariff in Korea, down from 21.3% last year, so well below the 40% rate in effect prior to implementation of CORUS FTA. So the tariff rate is scheduled to decline to zero by 2026. So given the tariff advantage, U.S. beef is in a prime position to gain the significant market share over the course of the next few years. The top competitors, Australia and Canada and New Zealand, also benefit from their own FTA with Korea. So the U.S. beef tariff advantage will end as other suppliers eventually reach a zero-duty tariff. The USMEF maximized the growth with exporters and industry partners prior to the market equalization. As a demand for fresh, high-quality grain fed is trending in, the demand for U.S. beef, chilled beef, is also rising. The U.S. chilled beef is now leading the supplier to Korean market, taking 58% total chilled beef in first quarter this year. The strong growth of chilled beef import, which has increased by 24% last year, slowed a little bit but continued in first quarter, showing 5.8% because the fourth quarter last year, importer has reduced the volume to balance the market supply and demand a little bit. Frozen beef, U.S. beef import has increased by 17.4% in first quarter of this year. So with these all favorable market conditions, U.S. beef strengthening the firm number one market position in Korean market. Korean consumer confidence is no longer as a major issue. We compete with the quality and the price. Moving on, pork. U.S. pork benefit most from the preferential access in Korea because of the CORUS FTA. Frozen pork, the majority of Korea imports entered Korea duty-free, while the chilled pork is subject to 4.5% duty that will be phased to zero as well by 2021. And other supplier, the EU, Chile, also benefit from zero duties on the majority of pork cuts. So again, like Joel mentioned before, for pork market in Korea, African swine fever remains as the biggest uncertainty factor, but U.S. pork remain as a reliable and consistent pork supply to Korean buyers. So let me explain a little briefly about the market trend. In Korea, demographic changes very quickly in Korea. Single households are already taking 30% of total household, which has increased to more than double in the last 15 years. And women's labor market participation continued to grow, reaching 53% in 2 years ago. And double income household takes about 46% of total household. So, and the number of family members continue to decrease. So most of the people in Korea, they are very constrained by time, and it's hard to manage the food ingredients. So Korean consumers' demand for convenience has spurred the growth of home meal replacement sector, as prepackaged meals are easy to make and sometimes ready to cook or ready to eat. So because of this popularity, the home meal replacement industry is modernizing and improving the product, moving away from traditional noodle or rice dumpling into more complex dishes such as meal kit, requiring the premium ingredients as consumer demand for high quality. So now in Korea, home meal replacement market is now fourth generation positioned as smart food since 2015, not just replacing the meal. So the growth of, in addition, the growth of convenience stores in Korea has been a result of growing consumer demand for quick and easy. So HMR and convenience store sector continue to be the key target market for the U.S. beef and pork industry. And secondly, the meat boom has been continued in Korean market, and consumption of red meat in Korea has been growing, and the greater variety of culinary concepts from Western culinary concepts such as American-style steak, burger, and barbecue to authentic Asian food concepts. The U.S. beef is positioned as an ideal supplier for this culinary application using the high quality preferred the Korean items such as short rib, chuck roll, and other Korean barbecue thin meat items, as well as the shoulder part, the well-positioned cut last year. So U.S. beef continued to display competitors' product and the opportunity to continue expanding the U.S. beef are in fast-growing e-commerce, home meal replacement, and the large retail chain, as well as the catering sector. My last point is Korea recently had a labor policy change under the current President Moon administration, so it accelerates the structural change of retail operation. So minimum wage has increased by almost 30% in the last 2 years, and Korea recently adopted 52 work hours per week mandatorily. So this led drastic change, especially in retail, cutting down the labor at the store and rely on the third-party supplier who cut and pack the meat for the retailer. So case-ready products are fast dominating at the retail shelves with homemade replacement products. So USMEF closely working hard with the case-ready and homemade replacement manufacturer to make sure they choose the U.S. meat as a main ingredient. So with that, I will conclude on Korean part.
Okay, thank you, Jihei. Now we're going to hear from Oscar Ferrara. Oscar is our regional director for Mexico, Central America, and the Dominican Republic. Oscar?
Hey, thank you, Joe. Good afternoon. I will start in some remarks about these last couple of days, you know, about the situation, the tariff situation. It really was a huge relief, not only for us, but also for the our partners in Mexico. It was a very challenging year for the industry, for the importers in Mexico. The key word, I guess, like in China, was the uncertainty. All the back and forth between not only in trade areas, but other sectors, like inflation stuff. migration and in particular. So I think these are very good news. We are very optimistic about the future of the bilateral relations between Mexico. The our partners, or contacts in the industry in Mexico are very optimistic. And I think that is the positive of all of it. After 1 year, we were close to our partners in Mexico. We worked together, and I think that is important. And then I think after this, we can see that they are optimistic and they are committed to our process. Having said that, I think that the now is the hard work coming. We need to regain the market share that we lost, the 4%. We are going to we are ready to start some of the new programs in Mexico, or continue some of the programs in Mexico to just get that 4% back to our corner. We are working not only with the big importers, but we are working on all sectors of the market in Mexico. We are planning to start new activities, the product development in terms of promotions, in terms of education, and create new partnerships with the key players in the Mexican market. This situation with port, we saw the situation in two sides, let's say. The first was what was happening in Mexico and how we can help there's another exporters to diversify the products to other markets. So we also have a Central America and the Dominican Republic in overall covering from our offices, and we can see that the story in Central America and Dominican Republic is very positive for the pork industry. We have tremendous growth in Dominican Republic and also in countries like, for example, Honduras, Guatemala. So I think we were able during that this year to protect what we have in Mexico, but also we were able to expand our export in other regions in other countries in Central America. With respect to beef, I think beef is a scenario is a way more positive. We have a 14% increase in volume in Mexico and 16% in value. The same positive number we have in the region in general, with Dominican Republic being the star in the region, with the tremendous growth on beef. I think a 47% increase in volume and 52% increase in value in the Dominican Republic is something that we have to highlight. And and again, you know, working with our partners in the region, we were able to maintain this positive trend that we have with beef during the past years. In terms of consumption in Mexico, I would like to say that one of the things that people were concerned is about external competition in the market, in particular for pork. We saw that in pork during the last years, during the last 2 years, we have seen an increase in the consumption in pork, and people were afraid that we would lose some of the consumption for other substitutes, like a poultry, for example. So we haven't seen that. We see that Mexico appetite for pork is increasing, and that is a positive note. In terms of beef, the consumption has been relatively stable at 10 kilograms per capita during the last 2 or 3 years. So that is an area of opportunity for us, because we know that Mexico Mexicans are good consumers of beef products, and I think we have an area of opportunity there. In terms of other areas of what we are doing to do that, again, I say that we are going to focus on education, working with not only with the big importers, but also we are working with with in the HRI sector, educating chefs to how to handle or how to cook overproduct and how to handle overproduct. We are working on in the promotion area. We are working with a new key account, developing new products with them. For example, we have a during these 10, 11 months that we have we started, we were developing new activity with pro, with a company like Carne Mar, in which we work with them to expand the number of outlets selling U.S. pork products in Mexico from 5 to almost 50, 55 outlets right now, and we are expanding that to 250 outlets during the year, this year and the next year. We also are working on in developing new products with some key importers, and also we are showcasing new ways to consume U.S. pork and beef in Mexico with activities such as the U.S. Meat Factory that is a new concept that we are developing, we are having in Mexico, in which we invite a new chef in restaurant, new restaurant. We are helping them to develop new products based on U.S. and beef and pork products. I think I will let there, and there are some questions. I'm going to answer those questions.